So after a year of college, my mom said, do you really want to? I mean, you could always be a history teacher. She said, why don't you try to do radio or TV? I know it's a tough business, but give it a shot.
And I'm like, dude, I represent Jay-Z, and you want me to represent this rapper? But I heard him, and I had a love of politics, and so we made a trade. I told him I would promote his album if he would teach me politics.
And after I saw my first article in print, you know, and you see your byline in print and, you know, all the space they've given to everything that you've written, I was just in awe, and I was hooked. And I remember telling myself, you know, I could get paid doing this. This is something. Yeah. This is something I think I could get used to. This is a lot of fun.
Now, from WGN Radio News, a look back at the day that was, and a deeper look into issues and stories with Andrea Dallas and the reporters on 720 WGN.
Thank you for being with us on 720 WGN. A Tuesday night edition of Andrea and the Reporters, and another awesome panel. Dear friends, great reporters, amazing journalists with us tonight. Lourdes Duarte, Jeff Cohen, and Amy Guth. So without further ado, we're going to introduce our panel and get into some of the day's events. Wow, slow news days, huh, lately?
No, nothing happened today.
Right?
Come on.
Holy cow, it's just one after the other. Lourdes Duarte with Channel 9. Tell us a little bit about who you are and where you work.
Yeah, so I've been lucky enough to work over at WGN-TV for, it'll be 12 years in September, and I anchor the 4 o'clock news there at GN. I've been on the morning show, the evenings, all sorts of hours, and then I also am one of the investigative reporters at the station doing a lot of the longer format stories, so they'll be 5-6 minutes long on any topic, and so we're always looking for tips, so if you've got them, please send them my way. And then also, I host the public affairs show at WGN, which highlights the work of the Latino community and some of the progress that they've made and some of the things that they want to do here in the city of Chicago. So that's my story.
You stay busy.
I stay busy, yeah. I've got a few things going on.
Someone else who wears a multitude of hats, my colleague here at WGN Radio, and now a brand new endeavor that you're starting, Amy Guth.
Hello. Yes. So I host here on WGN, and this year is my 10th year. It was exactly 10 years ago that I started on this station. And the new thing that I'm doing is a podcast with Crane's Chicago Business. It'll be a daily podcast just highlighting the stories of the day in the business world and an in-depth interview, very similar to what I do on the Wintrust Business Lunch on Saturdays. And then I'm also executive director of the Midwest Independent Film Festival, because to me, storytelling takes many forms and,
yes, it does.
And can be done on many platforms. So, documentary filmmaking was the foray into film for me, because that just seemed like a very logical extension of journalism.
Absolutely. Wow. And again, staying very busy.
Indeed.
As always, wearing many hats. Our friend Jeff Cohen from the Chicago Tribune. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going?
Tell us about yourself.
So I do metro investigations for the paper. I've been there for 20 years, which is hard to believe, but that is the number. I've been doing investigative work for about 7-8 years, mostly political stuff, mm-hmm. following campaign money around, things like that. And I'm also a veteran of both the courthouses here in the city, 4 years at Dirksen doing federal stuff, and then 4 years before that at 26 and Cal.
So I thought kind of an interesting topic. We always start a little bit about talking about just some of the big stories of the day, news of the week, what's been happening. And I thought it would be probably appropriate with the investigative background and the entertainment background here tonight to start talking about this Jussie Smollett case and how the twists and the turns and the craziness and the coverage, and I've never seen, at least in recent memory, so much blame trying to be cast. Well, is this the media's fault? Is this the celebrity's fault? Is this the police's fault? You know, I just have seen so many twists and turns with this story in the past few weeks. Lourdes, you're part of the investigative team. Isn't it crazy?
Yeah, I think some of that also comes from the interest, because it has blown up on social media at a level that, you know, the media obviously wants to feed people wanting to get information, so you try to keep them updated on what's going on. But yeah, there have been so many twists and turns, and they change from not just day to day, but hour to hour.
Oh, sure.
I mean, even just today, we hear as I'm driving in that Kim Fox has recused herself
right.
from that case. So, I mean, there's so much going on at a very, you know, every minute of the day. Something's going on with that case, and
yeah.
we still don't have a resolution to it, and we'll see how long it takes.
Right, and it started off like kind of in the entertainment venue. Mm-hmm. Now it's moved off into the courts, you know, the court beat.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sparked two really interesting conversations within the journalism world, right? One is that you have that journo spidey sense where you're like, this doesn't feel right from the beginning. I think a lot of us kind of felt like this wasn't it. And then what you touched on, Lourdes, and that was the push pull between, you know, you can't overfeed necessarily where there is not new information to share. And yet the minute you don't share something every hour, you have listeners or viewers or readers saying, oh, the media is not covering it.
You're like, you don't care.
You don't care. And you're like, well, I don't have anything new to tell you.
Right.
And there's an interesting dance there, I think, within all that. But I mean, that case has been a really fascinating one to watch, partly because it was one of the, I feel weird about it. Like Spidey Sense says something's off about this. This doesn't feel right. You know, the new piece today, him being cut from some episodes of Empire. I mean, I think we will see the cards continue to fall from this. And I don't think it's quite over yet. I think there's still lots more to come.
Right.
But it's been an interesting one to watch both, just as a member of the industry and just to watch how people are reacting to it.
Yeah.
It's also hit both sides of the political, you know, spectrum that we have now with what either, you know, allegedly happened or didn't happen. You know, it had a racial element and kind of a Trump element, too. And so the two sides of the ball have kind of taken turns. Mm-hmm. You know, originally when it came out, there was a huge backlash against Trumpism and everything. And now that it looks like it could have been a hoax, you've got the other side kind of
right,
you know, shouting back.
So I think you're right. I think you're right. You have everybody involved here: the African American community, the LGBTQ community, politics, entertainment. I mean, this is kind of touches on every facet.
And I think the difficulty too in covering it as a journalist is the fact that so much of the information is coming from sources.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we all have our own individual sources that, you know, you got to start questioning, are those accurate? Because I mean, there was something just last week where CPD said, you know, they sent out a tweet saying that is information that's not accurate, and actually called out one of the news stations for getting it out there. So you start to question your own sources and wonder, gosh, am I doing something wrong by, you know, citing this information? So I think it makes it difficult then to be able to tell a story, too.
Yeah. Isn't it difficult? I mean, all of us now, we're all on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And don't you think just gathering news now and even getting the information out has just taken on a whole new, I guess, facet, for lack of a better word? Or just there's so many different dynamics. Information, as you said, Lourdes, just coming from everywhere, Twitter, Facebook, all social media platforms.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I think about this all the time, and I've long said this is a hill I'm going to die on happily. And I think it's so important now for us to include social media when we say the media. I mean, I really try not to say that phrase because it means so many different things to different people. But I think it's so important to take into account the social media portion of the news cycle of a media narrative of something, you know, because there you have everything from like the vigilante self-powered blogger journalist that'll be like, oh no, this has happened. We're like, well, police say this happened. Like there's a difference in appending police say or witness says or, you know, whatever that is. And I think that like little details like that, it's the game of telephone we played when we were a kid. And I think it happens at an unbelievable velocity now on social media.
Do you differentiate social media from just the media? Do you say social media on Twitter, on Facebook?
Personally, but I think when like readers or listeners are saying the media said, I was like, well, someone in your Twitter feed said, but that's not necessarily the media.
Exactly.
And I think we need to, you know, even if you say take a story from a credible news source and share it without accurately, you know, with maybe you shorten it, you like accurately attribute it or shorten that headline or something, you can lose an important detail and then it get, you know, that person's followers share it and it spins out of control really quickly without the full amount of information attached to it. So personally, I like slapped my dad on the wrist the other day for sending out sending an email to a bunch of people that had a link in it that wasn't a credible news source. I was like, Dad, you know better than that. What's the matter?
I'll tell my mom that too. She'll put something in. I'm like, wait, you got to check that, or at least Snopes it, you know, if it's a puppy and a cat or something.
Right.
At least Snopes it.
At least Snopes it.
Well, and, you know, the Tribune hasn't broken everything on this story, I think, for that reason. We've had to pause a number of times. They know. Where we have wanted to make sure that it's correct.
Yes.
It's one thing to be fast, and speed's important for everybody these days when you try to kind of catch the wave and be the story that's going to be viral. But it's more important on one like this to really make sure you're correct, because everybody's really watching it, and you can you know, you have to be fair to him as well.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's why I think from the beginning when we, I think we were confident or at least cautious in the beginning saying the alleged attack mm-hmm. or police say, or he tells police, you know, so I think the media, I think we usually get it right, especially now in this day and age when you have to check and double check and triple check your sources.
And have multiple sources.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We're talking to Amy Guth, Lourdes Duarte, and Jeff Cohen on The Reporters tonight. And now after this quick break, we'll get into a little bit more of their backgrounds and why they decided to enter this crazy business of ours. More after this on 720 WGN.
Let's get back to Andrea Dallas and The Reporters on 720 WGN.
We have WGN TV Investigates tonight at 9. We're talking to Lourdes Duarte, Jeff Cohen, and Amy Guth, our panel on The Reporters tonight. Lourdes, you are part of the investigative mm-hmm. team. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you decided to become a journalist.
I wish I had such a great answer for that. And unfortunately, people are always like, really? That's how you got into news? No, when I was in high school, I was taking all these difficult classes, and there was a teacher at the school who was notorious for giving out easy A's. I was like, I need an easy A. And so I was, I think it was either my sophomore or junior year, took this journalism class just on a complete whim and ended up loving it. I loved telling stories. I loved talking to people. I was like the business manager the first year. And then my last year, I was editor of the paper. And so from there, I kind of realized at that age that that was something that I wanted to do. Maybe I didn't know it was going to be broadcasting. I just thought it would be something within media. Mm-hmm. And just through the years, it sort of developed, I think.
And where'd you grow up?
Everywhere. Okay. So my parents are Cuban. I think I've told you this before. Uh-huh. And in the 70s and 80s, a lot of Cuban families would move to Puerto Rico. And so there's a huge Puerto Rican or a huge Cuban community in Puerto Rico. And we were one of those families. So I lived there from the time I was one until I was 11.
Oh, very yeah. cool. Yeah. Sorry about that. We
no,
have
that's
music
okay.
in the background.
I didn't know
there.
If that was like the Oscars where I had to stop talking.
And now, and she
get out of here, Dorothy.
Amy, what about you? Where'd you grow up and why'd you decide to enter this business?
I also grew up everywhere. Uh-huh. We moved around a ton. My dad, I wasn't an army brat, I was a restaurant brat. So we moved to, like, as he was fixing up places and making them great. But I never made a conscious decision to enter this. I just always did it. So when I was six, I had a little pencil and ruler and I made a newspaper every single week. It was the Guth Gazette and I made that without fail. No. In fact, one time I missed a weekend because I had the chicken pox and I was like, I got to catch up. Like the paper, I'm blue deadline. Like
you
I was really
deadline.
Stressed out about it. I was like six.
Do you still have copies of the Guth Gazette?
I'm sure. I would say my parents
look
do. Probably
mom?
Not because they downsized and they like
pitched
sold
everything.
All of our crap out of here. Like you're done. No, but I always did it. And then at one point my dad gave me a typewriter, which I have tattooed on my shoulder. And that kind of doubled production. Cause then I had like a carbon paper and then the newspaper got big and I was like, okay, I can make more than one quarter a day
sure.
selling this bad boy. I can sell two.
Did you really sell the paper?
Oh yeah. I went to neighbors and it would be like breaking. The flower in the yard has bloomed. It was really ridiculous stuff.
Wow.
So
that's
I always
cool.
did it. And then I started kind of doing little, like recording stuff in my bedroom, on like a tape recorder where you'd like hit record and pause and play and, you know, and then unpause
sure.
it when, mm-hmm. right? Like you would, how you
we
would.
We still had it like that at WGN.
Well, there yeah. you go. We still had it like that here too. So I did that. And then, yeah, it was just a natural. I never once made the decision to do it. It was just always what I did and what I wanted.
I love that. I still want to see a copy of that Guth Gazette.
I'll find you one.
Yeah, you have to. Because you do stationery, too.
That's right. I have a little Etsy shop, and I do beautiful calligraphy, I believe.
Yes, you do.
And I love quotes. I love inspirational quotes. But, you know, I need a little sass in my life, so I put, like, a swear word in the inspirational yeah. quote or something like that.
Hey,
you have an original,
darling. I have an original when you made me stationery and yeah. I framed it. I thought I'm not even going to use this. It's so beautiful and pretty and so personal to me.
And we can't say it on
no,
the air.
No, we can't say it on the air, but I love it. It's framed in my house.
I'm glad.
Jeff, where are you from and how'd you decide to become a reporter?
Well, first, did they offer buyouts of the Guth Gazette?
Yeah. New owners, right?
I mean, it got weird because, like, the publisher and the editor and the reporter and the CEO were the same person, so it got a conflict of interest there.
Right, right. Right.
So I was an Army brat, moved here when I was in about first grade to the area here. So I, from listening to the show in the past, I know you always have to have a grandfather story.
Sure, right, and
a
you
grandpa
do.
Story. So I do have a grandpa story. So my family's really kind of like East Coast Irish Catholic background, mostly Wilmington, Delaware, the Philadelphia area. So he was a police detective, and he used to tell me all of his, you know, child inappropriate stories when I was a kid. And we moved here, a lot of our conversations would be about like crazy crime in Chicago and crazy crime in Philadelphia. And we started actually mailing each other newspaper clippings back and forth.
Oh, how cool.
And so I just kind of started in sorting through those and reading both papers here. I just kind of learned the kind of the cadence of crime reporting and just kind of it was always in the back of my head. And then I'm one of those who, you know, started working at the college paper and never really looked back.
I loved it. My
mom, into crime reporting.
By the way, still reads the newspaper cover to cover, except the sports section. She's not into sports, unless it's something, you know, to do with the Cubs. But she will clip articles and I've mail them to me in the snail mail. So stories I already know or have read, but I just think it's so cute that she clips the stories.
Yeah.
And I've gotten Guth and Jeff Cohen stories mailed to me. I'm like, yep,
nice.
That's right. So if you ever need any of your clippings,
you got
my mom
call.
Probably has them all. We're talking to Jeff Cohen, Amy Guth, and Lourdes Duarte on The Reporters tonight. Quick break and more after this on 720 WGN.
What happened? What's happening? What's yet to come? It's Andrea Darlis and The Reporters on 720 WGN.
WGN, thanks for being with us on Andrea and the Reporters. Another awesome panel tonight. Lourdes Duarte from Channel 9, Amy Guth from WGN Radio, and Cranes now, and Jeff Cohen from the Chicago Tribune. And we're just telling some fun stories off the air about our backgrounds and our parents and our past. And I wanted to ask each of you what, you know, I know this is like saying who's your favorite child, but what is a story, or who's your favorite parent maybe? Is there a story that you've covered, reported on, just something that's really passionate to you, something that really stuck out, maybe one of your favorite stories or something that you just really always think about and are really proud of the reporting of the story that you covered, something that just really sticks out?
The room goes silent.
I know.
We're all like,
I know.
It's just hard to narrow it down to one.
Because I can think of, you know, I'll think of different stories. Like Lourdes off the air, I was saying, I love the midwife story that you just did. And maybe just because it's new in my mind, but just stories like that that you really get to go in depth with. And you have a little bit of a, I don't want to say a luxury, but you get a little bit more time to kind of investigate a story. Is there one that stuck out?
You know what? I would say the ones that I really like are a lot of the feature stories.
Oh, yeah.
And just happy stories.
Uh-huh.
I know kind of people expect you to say something a little bit more, you know, investigative or crime or, but I did a story just in the last few years on a young man, Fabian Bautista, which I'm still friends with him. And I talk to his mom every couple of months, but he was born with a double cleft palate. So we followed him for about 8 months as he was going through the last pieces of his surgery correct the problem. So, I mean, that's amazing. He's now in college. He goes to UIC, but he was in high school at the time. So those are, you know, you feel very proud of those stories. And then there's the ones that I think are impactful in different ways. Maybe they're not necessarily a favorite story, but they're a story that you definitely remember. When I worked in Peoria, we covered Matt Hale. Do you remember him?
Oh,
white supremacist,
yes,
Matt Hale.
Yes.
He had a huge demonstration and people showed up opposing the work that he was doing and the demonstration that he was putting together. And it broke out into this huge fight where people were throwing chairs across a library. There was pepper spray as police came down, and we were the only camera crew in there covering that. So we were kind of off in a corner coughing. We had to wait till everybody filtered out of that room before we could get out. So those are stories that you're always going to remember because that's kind of once in a lifetime where you're covering a situation like that.
Yeah, and he went to jail, right? Is he?
Yeah, he's in prison right now.
Wow, that was.
I'd have to look up
crazy story,
what the time is and where he's at on it. But
right, and it's interesting how you always remember the smaller markets that you've been in, the smaller jobs, you know, good restaurants, clean bathrooms. That's how you always seem to remember a story.
Well, yeah, at that point I would have been 24, 25, and so to see something like that and see people just get so emotional and so upset where they wanted to hurt others. Was just incredible, I think, at the time.
Was Peoria your first TV station?
So I worked here at Telemundo when I was in college. That's how I got into news. I was an intern and then got hired to freelance report. And then that's how I sort of got into broadcast and TV. And then from there, I worked in radio and worked at different markets throughout the country.
So it was a homecoming for you when you came back to Channel 9.
Yeah,
10 years you've been there, huh?
It'll be 12 in September.
12 years. Oh, my God.
And I'm only 25.
I know, right?
It's amazing.
You started very young.
I was very, very young.
Very young. Amy, you have remarkable stories, too, because I knew you when we met, you were in charge of the Red Eye. And then you...
I knew you before that. And then, I knew you in Tribune days.
Oh, we did. That's right. The Tribune days.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the Red Eye.
Yeah.
And now Cranes. You have a brand new venture with Cranes.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So starting this daily podcast with Cranes, I'm really excited about doing. And I mean, I love business and technology topics anyway. And that's just something I gravitate to, particularly like tech culture. And I mean, that's very fascinating to me. And that's something I won't get off of anytime soon.
Oh, yeah.
But when you ask that question, I mean, the things that come to mind are similarly to what you said, are things that go a very human angle unexpectedly.
Right.
The first one that came to my head when you asked that was I had to interview Mario Van Peebles probably about, I don't know, 15 years ago when he did the remake of his father's, one of his father's films. And I was like the last person in a, you know, this whole long junket day for him. And everybody had asked him the same question. He was bored. He was restless. I had like 10 minutes to get in there. I was the last, and I was still kind of cub reporter at that time. I get in there and I just said, "You tired?" And he's like, "Man, I am." I said, "Okay, well," so we, you know, go through the quick things. And I said, what has no one asked you today that you want to talk about? And he stared at me for the longest time. He's like, "What do you put ketchup on scrambled eggs?" And I was like, "No, but boiled eggs, yeah, for sure." And suddenly that pivot, just he kind of chilled, and I think he was probably kind of brain dead from the day.
Right.
We end up having a like 2-hour conversation about racial narratives in film and how very subtle things are microaggressions. And it ended up being a totally different thing than I set out for it to be, this very like, "Hey, go cover this. Go ask him these 5 questions." And it ended up being a very, very different thing. I think that, I mean, what I think will stand out later is immediately, upon the conclusion of the 2016 election, I started making little audio essays of different protests and just asking people, "Why are you here? Why is it important to you to be outside today?" And I started getting a lot of really interesting answers. So I have this archive of audio. I've aired some of them here on the station for different things. So I think that's something I'll think of later. But I don't know. I always go back to that Mario Van Peebles interview. It was just kind of this unexpected thing that I was supposed to just be like, "Hey, go see this movie. He remade his dad's thing. Yay,
isn't
early
cool?
2000s. Whatever. And it ended up being this really deep conversation that, I mean, I immediately called my editor and I was like, "I need way more room for this."
Right.
"Way more room, because this is going to be this different thing." He was like, yeah, just give me what you got. And then once he saw, you know, the notes and heard the transcription or, you know, listened to the tapes, he was like, "Oh, yeah, we got to change this to a much longer thing." And it ended up being a very different piece and very, you know, like this very thoughtful thing about this conversation about, I mean, he was bringing up in particular Soul Plane was like a question he kept bringing up. He's like, "Why was that funny?" And the reason it's funny is because these are not the people you would expect to run this airline. And what is that really saying? And it really ended up being this really thoughtful conversation.
That's amazing. And they all stem from eggs.
Yeah.
You put ketchup on your eggs.
Yeah, I was like, I mean, maybe for a boiled egg, sure. And he was like, "That's weird. Let's talk." And that's how it kind of went.
I love that. I love that answer, because somebody asked me that one time too. And I thought, oh my gosh, with all the stories that we've covered over the years in our career, I don't know why this always comes back to me, but when Michael Jordan was sued, remember, because of Space Jam.
Yeah.
Now, Michael Jordan was the, and still is in many respects, the king of this town and just one of the best athletes of our time. But I remember covering this court case involving Space Jam and him, and he won the case. And afterwards, he came out. He was right in the courtroom, in the lobby of, I guess it was the Dirk Center, one of the courthouses. And he had a cigar, and he was asking if anybody, any of the press, and we were all, it was a gaggle of reporters around him, and I was smashed up against Michael Jordan, looking way up in the air, because, you know, I'm 5'5", and he's, you know,
not 5'5".
No, exactly. And he's asking for a cigar cutter. And somebody had one. It must have been one of his entourage. Clipped it, and he starts smoking the cigar right in the lobby of the Dirksen or the federal courthouse. And I thought, oh my God, this is so cool. I'm sitting right next to Michael Jordan, and he's smoking a cigar. I don't know why, Guth, that is. Oh, it always pops back. Not you know, election year of 2016, Hillary Clinton or whatnot. But that always,
it was so random.
Yeah, it was super random and something you wouldn't expect.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I think
cool.
we look back on election nights in a newsroom. There's no better place to spend an election than in a newsroom.
Right.
It's such an exciting and interesting time to be there. But it's always this weird stuff like that. That's like, oh, Michael Jordan's clipped cigar and this
and
this unexpected conversation that I think that really sticks out, because a lot of times I think those are just kind of a one-on-one or not many people saw it, whereas in a, like if you say newsroom election night, hundreds of people know what that feels like and know what that means.
Right. We can also put this. Wow, that's cool. Jeff, story that did it for you, or just really memorable one for you?
I agree with you guys. It's always the weird little things. Like just a couple of months ago on my birthday, the paper had sent me to New York, and I was sitting in a room with El Chapo.
Wow.
I was like, this is my birthday? Yeah.
Happy birthday to me, I guess.
But for me, it's really hard for me not to be associated with the Rod Blagojevich case. My entire career was kind of pre and post Rod Blagojevich, for better or worse. So the first part of it was kind of building up to being in the right place at the right time, like we were talking about off the air. You know, 26 in Cal for me was a really formative experience, and that taught me how to be a Chicago reporter, mm-hmm. not just a halfway decent newspaper reporter, but really know what Chicago was like and what the power structure was like, the kind of impact that crime has here, the way that the city at that time was really running through Bridgeport and Beverly, because you had Richard M. in the mayor's office, you had Dick Devine at the state's attorney's office. That was kind of the center of power. So once I learned how to source and how to understand how the city worked, that got me in position to cover Rod Blagojevich in the federal building. We broke a lot of stuff. You know, the fact that the Senate seat was in play, that he had been taped. We sent out the email when he was arrested. That's how most people knew that he had gotten arrested.
Right.
And then afterward, that kind of launched my investigative career, because I drifted into the political world.
And you wrote a book too.
Co-authored a book on it with John Chase, who's now at the BGA, who I know you know.
Right.
With editors thinking, well, you've done so much, political corruption work at Dirksen, you must know how it works, so go out and, find it ahead of time. And that's how I got into, following campaign money and stuff like that, following influence.
It's amazing. And you're talking about, many of you started with grandfather stories or family stories of how you got into this building. I'm just curious, who inspires you on a daily basis? I mean, is there a reporter or a journalist or a family member, just someone who kind of inspires you as you go mm-hmm. through your career? Is there anybody?
Well, I wasn't expecting that.
I know, and I wasn't expecting to ask it either. I don't know why I did.
I'll tell you someone who did early is that, I mean, I grew up mostly in the South and Southeast United States, mm-hmm. and all of your news anchors and reporters were blonde and blue-eyed, and certainly not an awkward, nerdy Jewish girl like me, right? And nobody that looked ethnic. And I saw, the first time I saw Christine Amanpour, I was like, oh, wait, she's got a nose and a chin and dark hair and she's ethnic. This can happen. Yeah. And I remember just kind of being like, okay, game on. And that really locked something in my head about representation at that point. So I don't know that I look to her regularly, but she was an early person that I just was like, all right, I see you there. I could do this.
I love that. I think I asked it because, you were talking about Blagojevich, and I think each of you just inspires young reporters and young journalists, whether it's crime, entertainment, the many hats that you wear, bilingual, just everyone's background. And that's a great point, too, Amy. It's the background. So I was just curious, who inspires you?
Yeah, no, I get inspired a lot when I see coworkers or even reporters from other stations or other outlets put together a really great story mm-hmm. and a great investigative story. I'm like, wow, how did they do that? And how did they get that source? And how did that happen? How did it come together? How were they able to do all this? So those kinds of things, when I see them, and it could be anyone doing those stories, I get really inspired and motivated to then try to do something either similar or, do great work like they're doing. So I think it's everybody who works in the business. I can get inspired from them on any given day.
I think we're very fortunate, too, that our business is so ever-changing, and it's mm-hmm. different. And I think that creates some of the excitement, too. I'm sure when you covered Rod Blagojevich, you were thinking, oh, here we go again. I just covered George Ryan. But every story is different, and everything that we do changes on a daily basis, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree with you. For me, it's coworkers too, are working hard every day. Yeah. And especially, being more on the investigative side, there's a whole lot of work that goes on paper hour by hour that's not investigative. And that's the stuff that's kind of paying the bills and letting those mm-hmm. of us who dig into stuff more do that. I think, specifically for me too, it's been a couple of editors who had a lot of faith in me as I was coming up. A guy named Terry Brown really helped get me hired at the newspaper. Really kind of took a chance on me because I didn't have a great deal of experience at the time, and put his neck out for me. And I can remember thinking, I will work at this paper even if it's 20, 30, 40 years, and I will remember that you did that, and I will not, let you down. Mm-hmm.
I love those stories. Yeah, inspirational coworkers. Yeah. Absolourdes. I see that with all of you guys, too. We're talking to Lourdes Duarte, Amy Guth, and Jeff Cohen on The Reporters tonight. And when we come back, I'll tell you ahead of time so you guys won't be caught off guard. I'm going to ask you all, what story is still out there for you? Story that you're chasing, you want to follow? Something that's kind of near and dear to you that you want to cover at some point in your career. More after this on 720 WGN.
Back to Andrea Dylis and the Reporters on WGN Radio.
And our panel tonight, Jeff Cohen, Amy Guth, Lourdes Duarte. Thank you so much for being here, you guys. I'm enjoying all of our stories. And before the break, I told you I was going to ask each of you, Jeff, why don't we start with you this time, a story that you still want to cover. It could be something you're working on, something you want to chase, something that just is kind of near and dear to you that you want to explore further.
Not fair that I have to go first. You know, everybody forgets that we have a mayoral election in about a week all the Jussie Smollett stuff and everything going on. But yeah, I think for me, I really like what I'm already doing. I like, you know, keeping a check on politicians. I've drifted a little bit more lately toward, you know, policy stuff affecting affordable housing, things like that. And as I thought about this question, I really think that Chicago is at a real crossroads right now, even more than it has been in past mayoral elections, where, not to use the tale of two cities cliche, but it is kind of it's turning into a haves and have nots city. And I really think that it's a good time. We're going to have a power shift. We're going to have a new mayor. It's going to be really important to see how that sort of plays out. Do we get, you know, a more progressive mayor? Do we get another, you know, more of a big business mayor like a Daley? And so I think I want to be there to kind of cover that. Watch where the influence comes from. See who starts to try to buy in. Is it the same kind of people? Is it something new?
Well, yeah, I like
that. I'll be there for that.
Boy, by the way, just quickly detour. This mayor's race, did you ever expect to see anything? 21 candidates down to 14. The pre-ROM announcement, the post-ROM announcement. Every week, it just is completely different who's in the lead. And we have 1 week left. And I think the thing, wasn't it 30% or 40% of voters are still undecided? Maybe even more.
It's high, whatever it is. I've seen 19 and 20%.
Right. When you have the leader at 14%, I'm not sure if, you know, and then the second is 13 and then 12 and then 7 and plus or minus 4. It's just going to be anybody's game.
It's like when you go to the restaurant and you have way too many options.
Right.
You don't know
like
what to
pick. I'll say it like the Greek restaurant.
Yeah.
Where you can get French toast or a hot dog, depending on.
Yeah.
Amy, how about you? Story that's still out there for you. Now, and you wear a multitude of hats, too. I know you podcast. You are a radio host. You are the chairman of the Midwest Film Festival.
Chairman.
head kahuna.
That's right. Boss lady.
The boss lady.
So a couple of years ago, I started a documentary film about online harassment of women. And at that time, Trump was not the president and no one had ever heard the phrase Me Too. It became a very different thing very quickly. In my original plan, I was like, ooh, I'm getting a little behind schedule. I had not done documentary at that scale before. I had worked as a producer on another one that has wrapped. But at that point, like, I was like, okay, I'm a little behind schedule, but I'm good. I've got the meat of it. I just need to add a little bit of, you know, narrative story arc. And then I'm going to be done by the election. And then I was like, oh my God, wait, right. The responsible thing to do is I need to sit back and see what's happening right now. And then just even like the first couple of months of the presidency, I was like, this is a whole different beast. Like, people are communicating online in a very different way.
Oh yeah.
So to me, I was like, okay, pause. I need to, instead of like chasing every little sparkly thing like a cat, I need to like wait and see what's happening and then keep regrouping. So I had to kind of go back and put this whole political layer on it, because at the time it was kind of the Wild West. Like, behavior was there, but the law had not caught up with any of that. And it still hasn't in many ways.
Right.
And it really is bigger than just people being jerks online. It's really about a lot of other things that become very impactful to people's lives and careers and the narrative that people believe about you when they Google you, and that's how you find jobs and careers have been changed because of things that have happened to people online. So it became this much bigger thing, and I kind of had to divide it off into an episodic series and approach it that way. So to me, that's like still this thing I'm chasing. But a lot of the themes that I do, like the other documentary, it is based in a safe house in Ecuador, and it's called La Mitad del Mundo. It's in Spanish with English subtitles, and it's that's looking at human trafficking around the world through the lens of this one safe house. So I worked as a producer on that one, and there's a lot of pieces in that. So, I mean, documentary is just this other beast because you're telling the same stories, you're doing the same things that you're doing in a as you're reporting, but you also have all this technical and creative stuff layered on top of it. So to me, that is the one that I'm still chasing because it's a story that's not yet ended. You know, we're just now making sense of what the Me Too movement even means in the workplace and in our lives.
Absolutely.
So the ending is close, but it's not quite there yet.
It's not quite there.
And I feel like it'd be like irresponsible to tell it too quickly.
Right.
You know,
I love the fact that you're being patient and waiting for it to play out too. So 2020?
I mean,
early release date?
I hope.
Yeah,
I mean, I think there's a couple
that'd
be of
amazing. I mean,
there's
that'd
a couple
so cool.
of like pieces of it that are pretty well packed in and pretty well done. Like, I don't think the like non-consensual pornography part has changed much.
Yeah.
Like a little bit of law has caught up with it, and there's some lawmakers that are taking that kind of thing more seriously because it's not just a matter of like you send somebody a text and they're gonna tweet it out. Sometimes it's like a matter of your consensual photos get like, there was one person in particular I spoke to, her husband's iCloud account got hacked. And she's a teacher, and these photos are out there on her. So there's like an SEO component too, that they're posted as if she posted them herself. And she's a third grade teacher. And so she's not a third grade teacher anymore. Like her whole life has changed completely because she and her husband were, you know, they were like traveling. Like he travels for business, and suddenly, you know,
boom,
became a different thing.
Up.
Yeah.
Sure, sure.
So I think like that piece of it is pretty well compact, but like the political part was going to be very standalone. And now I've had to kind of go back and pop in political
sure.
layers of everything. So
because everything changes on a daily basis.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a very, very different thing than when I started that project.
Well, I look forward to, we all look forward, I think, to
no one's looking forward to
resolution.
That being done in me.
I know, right? Opening night and first interview right here.
Right there. You got it.
Lourdes, how about you?
That is amazing. I want Amy to be my new best friend.
I know.
She's
done.
Like,
done.
I just love her.
Done.
This is the first time that we actually get to talk, and she's got so many amazing projects.
Right?
So she's inspiring.
She is
when
inspiring.
You're talking
you
about
are good.
So,
and she'll make you pretty stationary too.
Definitely. Oh,
we've already talked. So it's happening.
All right, Mrs. Duarte.
Okay, so let me
Duarte,
see what I can tell
longer.
You. Short term. Oh gosh, yeah. Short term. I worked on a story. I think in the last couple months on the Uber drivers over at O'Hare.
Oh yeah,
and how
yeah.
they've got that packed lot. There's yeah. fights that have broken out. Crashes, congestion. It's like mayhem out there. And I've been talking to the city and the aviation department. They're saying they're going to install a light. It's been months, and there's still no resolution. So you go out there on a Thursday night. And customers are waiting, you know, 30 minutes, an hour for a ride, and the drivers are getting fed up. So I'd love to see a resolution to that. That's just a recent story that I've worked on.
Absolutely.
And then longer term, I lived in South Florida for a long time, lived through Hurricane Andrew, and I've always, always, always wanted to cover a hurricane. I know it probably sounds completely ridiculous, but
no,
I just think the aftermath of natural disasters, you see the best in people sometimes, and you also see kind of the worst in people. So
right.
you see both sides of the spectrum, and I've always wanted to cover something like that.
And the impact it's had.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope you do.
Yeah, yeah. So
I look forward to seeing that as well.
That's all I got.
Lourdes, Amy, Jeff, thank you so much. Where can people find you online, on TV, on the radio, social media, the paper? Where can we find y'all?
Yeah, the paper and ChicagoTribune.com. I'm on Twitter at Jeff Cohen, just my name.
Very good.
Yep, we're out there.
Perfect.
C-O-E-N.
I'm also on Twitter, just my name. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all those things, just my name. And then here and soon to be at Cranes.
Very good.
Okay.
Lourdes.
And I'm also on all the social media platforms. It's Lourdes. Lourdes, not Lardass. So make sure you get that right. Lourdes WGN or Lourdes TV.
Childhood stories coming up again.
Yeah.
Lourdes,
okay.
Amy, Jeff, thank you so much. And
thank
the podcast
you.
Will
thank
be
you.
Available on WGNradio.com a little later on tonight. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
More after this. News next, 720 WGN.